Ladies and gentlemen, we are afraid that tonight there will be a slight interruption in Hendrik Van Loon's weekly discussion of the psychological background of the revolutionary leaders of the past. A rather few more important events of today have curtly pushed them into the background of our interest. Hendrik Van Loon will explain why. Ladies and gentlemen, we give you Hendrik Van Loon.
Now, the little incident I'm about to mention is really nothing very new, nor in itself is it very interesting. It happens on practically every voyage across the ocean. And if you have ever crossed that vast stretch of water, as so many people have done during these last 20 years, you'll remember that it happened to you too, where apparently it was two times. From 2 or 3 days out from land, the ship suddenly becomes alive as a rumor, a most exciting and welcome bit of news. A little bird has been seen. It was said to be sitting dejectedly on the upper deck, for apparently it was too tired to find a more comfortable place on which to perch. And so you actually went all the way to the upper deck, where you discovered that the sun was shining, perhaps for the first time during the entire voyage. And you saw that little bird with your own eyes. Now, that little bird was undoubtedly on its way home when some adverse winds had caught it and had carried it out to sea. For days it had been desperately trying to keep itself afloat in the air, and at last it had seen something solid, your ship, and now there it was. But too exhausted to do much but to sit and look very miserable indeed. Now you'll remember, too, that when that happened, the entire ship suddenly became one vast committee on bird rescue. Experienced travelers told you what they had done on previous trips, and other little birds had come to their ship to find a place of refuge. Next, there were heavy debates as to what the little bird should be offered to regain its strength. There were some in favor of a strict bread and water diet, but others insisted that little birds will only eat worms, and so, for lack of worms, which you rarely find in the middle of the ocean, they suggested that it be offered choice morsels of extra prime beef, which you find in abundance, and which little birds, as far as my own recollections go, very rarely seem to fancy. But I might as well confess that I am not really very much of an expert on birds. I love dear old Louis Fuertes so much that I tried very hard to become somewhat of an ornithologist. But I never got very far. These feathery creatures still remain considerable of a mystery to me. For example, just now we have discovered that a robin has made its nest right above our kitchen entrance. It had so well hidden its apartment that we had not noticed its unexpected guest until there was a family of 3 very tiny robins, consisting mostly of enormous beaks, which were forever awaiting whatever Mama intended to bring them home for supper. And since I'm on the subject, and since my sort of program rarely offers me an opportunity to talk about birds, let me give the world of science a few very interesting observations which I've made. For example, I do not really know, even today, what the Mama Robin brings home for supper. For although she doesn't show the slightest fear of us when we go about our own business, and when noisy delivery boys bring those rich viands which are necessary to keep a radio artist up to his best efforts, though the creature deliberately refuses to feed its children when we are looking. Noise doesn't matter, but you mustn't look. Then there is another interesting item. Mama is apparently the sole breadwinner for the entire happy family. This, of course, may be merely another result of the depression. Nowadays, in so many families, the women are doing all the work that it's only natural that robins, having spent so many thousands of years in the company of human beings, are following our example and are letting their women support a race while Papa is out looking for a little job. Well, we felt sorry for the poor, hard-working little creature, and we offered it every substitute for worms of which we could think, since it was part of our own family now, but apparently it's got to be worms, and then such as the mother herself has pulled out of our garden, for all substitutes are politely declined. But now, to return to the small birds that got out to sea under their own sail, these poor little birds, and would be drowned unless they had caught up as a steamer. Whenever such a lost creature has made its appearance, I have discovered on all my trips, then you too, when you've been on your trip, you must have noticed that the entire ship, both the crew and the passengers, get animated by but one single thought: how to keep that bird alive until land shall have been reached. Before that tremendous problem, all the other great problems of the day turned sickly pale, and die from sheer lack of interest. People have spent 5 days in the smoking room bitterly debating whether good Colonel Mundelein of Chicago had been right or wrong, and whether the head of the German nation had been a good paper hanger or a bad one. And by the way, wasn't he really a house painter and not a paper hanger at all? Well, people who had debated those interesting points until in the end the smoking room steward had been obliged to call the bar or call for the sergeant at arms. Suddenly, these bitter antagonists have become sworn friends in their common desire to save the life of their unexpected guest, the little bird on the upper deck. Charming ladies who had definitely made up their mind the moment the ship had left port that they were never, under any circumstance, going to exchange a single word with that terrible crowd on board, which they considered entirely beneath their own social dignity. Those same charming ladies were actually caught in intimate discussions about the problems of bird life in general and saving little birds on board ship in particular, and conversations with total strangers, whom until that very moment they had snooted with the most accomplished disdain of the acknowledged social leaders of some very important and exclusive suburb. For everybody on board was filled with deep compassion for that helpless little feathery creature, which must be saved at all cost, and it was not until the ogres of the custom house department had actually made their appearance that these kind-hearted passengers became conscious once more of any other problem than that of saving the life of one tiny bird, who by then had hastily escaped to the nearest shore and was undoubtedly telling very tall stories about his terrible adventures to such other birds as were not too busy or too blasé to listen to his tales of horror. Now you may well ask why this lecture on bird lore, when, if memory serves me right, I was going to talk tonight about our old friend Maximilien Robespierre. Well, 3 days ago I got hold of a copy of the French Illustration, and therein I found a series of photographs of the ruins of the charming little city of Guernica, which was the old capital of the Basque people who, as we now know, live or lived in northern Spain, for most of them seem to be dead. I've never seen that little city, and I shall now never see it, because apparently it no longer exists. A few broken walls and a few decapitated trees, and that is all that remains of a city of some 5,000 inhabitants. I went through 4 years of war, and I've gone through a couple of revolutions. I thought that I knew about everything there was to be known about man's bestial fury whenever he turns against his fellow man. But these photographs were the worst yet. Of course, during the Great War, it not infrequently occurred that some unfortunate city was situated on the line of march of one of the armies and then got very badly damaged. That, God knows, was bad, but it was more or less inevitable, and one therefore accepted it, just as one accepts the fact that a village that happens to come in the way of a flood or a volcanic eruption is going to suffer some very painful damage. But according to the very sober description in his well-known French weekly, which is not in the least excited about such things as a rule, Guernica was not in the way of anybody any more than, well, let us say Mount Vernon, the old Washington homestead, would be in the way of an invader from Europe who was trying to capture New York. Guernica was not a fortress, had no special strategic importance, it happened to be a sort of shrine of the Basque people, and its destruction might weaken their morale. And so the city was deliberately bombed away from the surface of the earth, and the foreign photographers were told to come and show the world that once more we might learn the meaning of the word frightfulness. Soon the world was to learn even more about it. I refer you now to the pictures in our papers, showing the boatloads of children who are now on their way to France and England. These children are refugees, which in plain language means that at the age of 10 or 12 or 6 or 5, they have been obliged to leave their own country and to find safety in some strange and distant land. All of them, according to the reports that reaches, had lost everything they had ever been able to call their own, which, however, did not mean very much, for in the old Spain, most children never called very much their own, not much more than perhaps an old shirt or a pair of pants. But at least those children until recently had parents. Now the parents, too, are gone. And if it weren't for the generosity of a few foreign nations of a different religion, different race, they would either starve to death or be put out of their misery by foreign mercenaries looking for some convenient machine gun fodder. I hope more than that, for we are really kind-hearted people. I'm sure, more than hoping, that you're beginning to see what I'm driving at. Under normal circumstances, We are all of us willing to risk life and limb to save the life of a stray bird or a stray dog or a stray cat, as the people were on board. I told you about a moment ago. And then the moment war breaks out, we are doomed to sit by while an entire generation of children is being wiped out because two contending factions are trying to decide what form of new tyranny shall be established in some unfortunate part of the globe. Yes, I know all about our neutrality laws, and I realize that I too should practice neutrality in thought. But I am afraid that not only I, but the great majority of those who are listening to me must feel the way I do. Isn't there, so we ask ourselves, some way in which we can accord to the children of this world the same protection we bestow upon our stray cats and dogs and birds and even fish. When we see a man in the street abusing his horse, we go to the nearest telephone booth. We call up the SPCA. The SPCA comes and takes this fellow to court, and the courts rarely show any mercy upon such a brute. He's made to pay a heavy fine, or he goes to prison, and he stays there too, no parole. When the swallows in Austria, a few years ago, were caught by a blizzard, the kind-hearted Austrians carefully packed them in boxes and sent them to Italy by flying machine so that they could thaw out. When Slippers, the dog of the Duke of Windsor, is bitten by another dog and makes the front page of our newspapers, and for the moment at least, we are even able to forget about the tragedy of that lost empire. But here, day after day, we must sit by, read our papers, read those stories. We must say nothing, we must do nothing, while thousands of children. And what have they got to do with international politics? While thousands of children are being slaughtered, maimed, starved to death, to make a devil's holiday for a couple of generals who have blundered very badly, and are now trying to save face by sacrificing the kids. And what's the answer? I don't know. And I don't suppose either that very much can be done about it. Perhaps the matter can and will be referred in the usual European way. The matter will be referred to a committee of diplomats. And they'll come together, perhaps in Geneva, and they'll report on it 10 years hence when all the children are dead. But I've had this on my mind for quite a long time, and I had to speak about it, just as you have had it on your mind, and won't mind having listened. Those Spanish children are a constant accusation to the whole of our common civilization. We belong to that civilization, even if their own people perhaps didn't care, were a little more callous about it than we usually are. But we belong to that common civilization. That civilization, which is now so far advanced that in our part of the world every cat and dog and horse, every goldfish, enjoys a decent modicum of safety and protection. And so I'd like to ask, isn't it about time that someone arose to establish a society for the prevention of cruelty to the children of belligerent nations? Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Hendrik Van Loon, who tonight digressed a bit from his weekly discussion of the psychological background of the revolutionary leaders of the past in favor of a few more rather important events of today. This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City.